Why?
Just because. That's the way it is. I can't stand queers.
But they're not hurting you in any way.
No, but I'll kill them if they come in here all the time, you know. I wouldn't want to come and pick up some chick and find out it's a guy. I would have to do something about that.
Oh, say can you see in the blinkless electron gun eye of the mainstream media mirage that what we hail are the hallucinations of authority and progress and righteousness, whose sweet and stern voices have captivated and conditioned millions of human creatures, stimulated them in passive acceptance of technological disruption and destruction of our environments, of our histories, of the possibilities of alternative ways of being, whose seven stripes are broken swastikas, whose 50 stars are black holes sucking 200 million atomized existences into the daily routine of the human herd of hamsters, rolling the great wheels of the death machine, squeaking at the shocks and nibbling the cheese, and reciting and discussing and delighting in their mutually shared programming history, in their lives, in their cancers, their TV shows, their deaths, their jobs, their ignorance, their endless, pointless forward creeping, their glorious blind nosedive into their paycheck's pleasures, into an ecstatic emptiness, a glowing incinerator, a parking lot full of businessmen, conspiring and colluding on the big dream, the big lie, the big nauseating, screaming, sweating nightmare of business America, media America, corporate America, consumer America, fascist America.
I am Katrina Rose. I'm an attorney, and I'm a transgender legal historian. I'm also someone who actually cares about whether or not transsexual and transgender rights continue to exist in 2006 and beyond. As such, I'd much rather be a trans flake than a trans fake. Yes, welcome to I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake on the Trans FM Radio Network, hosted by Katrina Rose. Brought to you this week by soap. Well, what else would you use to clean things?
This might not be a major issue for those who live inside the Beltway, but for my neighbors in Salt Lake City, my constituents throughout Utah, and good, clean, decent Americans across the country, this is a critical issue.
Well, you know, it may have been made an important issue for those constituents by the brainwashing techniques of Karl Rove, but we also all know that it won't actually affect their lives. And I think deep down most of them know it too. It won't decrease their taxes, it won't decrease gas prices, it won't keep any of their kids from being killed in Iraq, or Iran, or Lebanon, or anywhere else. The only people it's really important to are people who need to get elected in November. Of course, I'm talking about the fraudulently named Marriage Protection Amendment. Now, as I'm recording this, it's actually in July, so the House debate on this insane waste of government resources has just taken place. Now, I'll get to some of that in a bit. What you just heard, you might recognize his voice, that's Orrin Hatch, right-wing nutcase senator from Utah. And I want you to listen to this snippet one more time.
This might not be a major issue for those who live inside the Beltway, but for my neighbors in Salt Lake City, my constituents throughout Utah, and good, clean, decent Americans across the country, this is a critical issue.
Now, if the average federal government employee misused the resources that he has access to, he or she has access to through his job, misuse them for personal gain, they'd probably end up going to jail. And that's pretty much what the fascist party fraudulently called Republican right now. What the fascist party has done with these ridiculously worded, touted, whatever you want to call it, ridiculous efforts to pass this federal so-called marriage protection amendment. But again, I'm actually not focusing on that fraud with that little snippet from Orrin Hatch. I'm actually wanting you to know about a piece of fraud that happened after that. And again, this might get repetitive. I want you to listen to it one more time.
This might not be a major issue for those who live inside the Beltway, but for my neighbors in Salt Lake City, my constituents throughout Utah, and good, clean, decent Americans across the country, this is a critical issue.
Hopefully you paid really close attention to this word.
Clean, 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 clean.
Now, here is how that passage will be seen if you run across it in the official record of the proceedings of Congress, namely the congressional record. This might not be a major issue for those who live inside the Beltway, but for my neighbors in Salt Lake City, my constituents throughout Utah, and good, decent Americans across the country, this is a critical issue. Did you not hear me say a certain word?
Clean, clean, clean.
Now this, perhaps you're familiar with this by now. It's got a little bit of play on some blogs not long after that Senate floor debate. I actually hesitate to call it debate because it wasn't. It was posturing. There is a difference. That was early in June. Got a little bit of play on some blogs, including the Washington Blade. I don't ordinarily give props to them for anything because it's one of the more transphobic publications in the country. But it was on their blog that I first heard about it, and I saw it mentioned a couple other places. Although I did record all of the debate slash posturing as it was being broadcast on C-SPAN. That sound clip I played, just to be fair, I yanked that off of YouTube as I haven't had time to go back through everything that I recorded in June. But, I've seen this played up a couple places, but not in the so-called fair and balanced Fox world, or even the so-called liberal other media. Why is that?
Yeah,
I know, this is annoying, but is it any more annoying than the speech itself that Orrin Hatch is trying to pass off as not being insulting toward anybody and everybody who disagrees with him?
Soon I discovered that this rock thing was true. Jerry Lee Lewis was the devil. Jesus was an architect previous to his career as a prophet. All of a sudden, I found myself in love with the world, so there was only one thing that I could do, was ding-a-ding-dang my dang-along-ling-long. built my car. It's a love affair. Mainly Jesus and my hot rod.
Yeah, fuck it.
Jesus. The missing years. It was raining. It was cold. West Bethlehem was no place for a 12-year-old. So he packed his bag and he headed out to find out what the world's about. He went to France. He went to Spain. He found love. He found pain. He found stores, so he started a shop. He had no money, so he got in trouble with a cop. Kids in trouble with the cops from Israel didn't have no home. So he cut his hair and moved to Rome. It was there he met his Irish bride. They rented a flat on the Lower East Side of Rome. Italy, that is. Music publishers. Bookbinders. Bible belters, swimming pools, orgies, and lots of pretty Italian chicks. Charlie bought some popcorn. Billy bought a car. Someone almost bought the farm, but they didn't go that far. Things shut down at midnight, at least round here they do. 'Cause we all reside down the block inside at 23 Skidoo. Wine was flowing, so were beers. So Jesus found his missing years. He went to a dance and said, "This don't move me." He hiked up his pants and he went to a movie. On his 13th birthday, he saw a rebel without a cause. He went straight on home and invented Santa Claus. Gave him a gift, and he responded in kind. He gave the gift of love and went out of his mind. You see, him and the wife wasn't getting along. So he took out his guitar and he wrote a song. It's called "The Dove of Love Fell Off the Perch." But he couldn't get divorced in the Catholic Church. At least not back then, anyhow. Jesus was a good guy. He didn't need this shit. So he took a pill with a Coca-Cola and he swallowed it. He discovered the Beatles and he recorded with the Stones. Once he even opened up a 3-way package for old George Jones. And Charlie bought the popcorn. Billy bought a car. Someone almost bought the farm, but they didn't go that far. Things shut down at midnight, at least round here they do. 'Cause we all reside down the block inside at 23 Skidoo. The years passed by like sweet little days. With babies crying pork chops and Beaujolais. When he woke up, he was 17. The world was angry. The world was mean. While the man down the street and the kid on the stoop all agreed that life stank. All the world smelled like poop. Baby poop, that is. The worst kind. So he grew his hair long and he threw away his comb. Headed back to Jerusalem to find mom and dad and home. But when he got there, the cupboard was bare, except for an old black man with a fishing rod. He said, "What you gonna be when you grow up?" Jesus said, "God." Oh my God, what have I got myself into? I'm a human corkscrew and all my wine is blood. They're gonna kill me, mama. They don't like me bad. So Jesus went to heaven. He went there awful quick. All them people killed him. He wasn't even sick. So come and gather around me, my contemporary peers, and I'll tell you all the story of Jesus, the missing years. Charlie bought some popcorn. Billy bought a car. Someone almost bought the farm, but they didn't go that far. And things shut down at midnight, at least round here they do, 'cause we all reside down the block inside at 23 Skidoo. We all reside down the block inside at 23 Skidoo.
Yeah, two songs that probably have never been played back-to-back in the history of broadcasting, and perhaps rightly so. Ministry's Jesus Built My Hot Rod and John Prine's Jesus the Missing Years. For some strange reason, I just thought both of them were appropriate after listening to Mr. Orrin Hatch. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Hatch's thing happened back in June. I'm doing this here in July, right after the psychosis on the same subject in the House of Representatives. And I want to play a couple of samplings from that. And again, occasionally someone asks me, well, you know, you're doing a show about trans stuff, and you're always kind of bitching about how, you know, the gay marriage stuff screws over trans people, so why are you focusing on this? Well, number one, a lot of the same people now, anyway, who are on the anti-gay marriage psychosis bandwagon are willing to screw us, even though there's a few, I think, out there who still know the difference. But number two, and more importantly, I really like listening to all this stuff, not simply to find out who our enemies are, but to find out and keep track of who doesn't mention transsexual marriage when they talk about the fabric of American life, the fabric that they're trying to protect, allegedly, and when they talk about the fact that prior to Hawaii, nothing like this had ever happened before, when we all know that transsexual marriages had been happening for quite a while. So if that's the case, and these anti-gay marriage things are only about this new stuff, then any honest court that finds itself having to interpret one of these in the context of a transsexual marriage will recognize the transsexual marriage. But that's just me. I have a functioning brain. And someone else who has a functioning brain, even though, you know, when you think about the fact that he really did try to get the Democratic nomination last time, you know, you kind of have to wonder, sort of. You know, I have met the guy once. He came to University of Iowa on a campaign stop. He actually talked to our union. You know, really seems like, you know, a good guy, and probably would be a good guy if he somehow or another, you know, all 400 people ahead of him in line died and he became president. But I'm talking about Dennis Kucinich, and this is his remarks on the floor of the House on July 18th, and pay real close attention to what happens at the very end of this. Now, this clip goes on a little bit beyond the actual end of his remarks, and then it goes back to the Republican floor leader, or the person who's actually managing the thing on the floor at this particular time, and he tosses it over to another Republican. But there's a little bit of goings on in there, which I'm guessing also will not appear in the printed pages of the Congressional Record.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to yield at this time 3 minutes to the gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Kucinich.
The gentleman's recognized for 3 minutes. With all due respect to my beloved colleagues, what if a man and a woman have a partnership which doesn't produce children? Is their marriage invalid? Is it less sacred? And the use of the word illegitimate here is a little bit troubling, because I thought we dispensed with those kinds of references as we became more enlightened. You know, it's easy to take a stand for the institution of marriage in the abstract, but try doing it in your own life, and that becomes a little more complex. It's far easier to tell others how they should live and whom they should be permitted to marry. The science of human relations requires humility. Whether in the heights of unity or the depths of divorce, our relationships, our companionships, our partnerships are our greatest teachers. Our relationships are also a sphere of influence which should be free from government interest or interference. Government does not belong in the bedroom or secretly listening on your phone, reading your books, reviewing your emails. Government does not have a rightful role in determining who you should love, who should love whom, and therefore enter into the formalization of a civil marriage contract. Now, we don't often quote from the Declaration of Independence here, but I think it'd be useful if I recited some words that are instructive at this moment. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men, and we know now all people, are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thomas Jefferson went on to write that governments are created to secure these rights. I might add that this government was not created to crush those rights. Today, with a proposed constitutional amendment defining marriage, we would establish a law which would be at odds with the 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection of the law. What's next? Amend the Pledge of Allegiance to take out the words "with liberty and justice for all"? What's next? Recarve the dais in front of us here, which has words carved in the wood, and I'll read them for those who aren't able to see them. Words carved in the wood below the speaker: tolerance, justice, union, liberty. Do we just take that apart, move it, leave it blank? You wonder why this Congress is not held in higher regard. I'll tell you why. In Iraq, our troops are caught in the crossfire of a civil war which grows more deadly every day. Administration has no exit strategy. Congress does nothing. Request another minute.
An additional 1 minute.
Gentleman's recognized for one
minute. In Iran, the Department of Defense is actively preparing for war while the administration sets the stage for negotiations that they intend to fail. Congress does nothing. In the Middle East, the region stands on the brink of a full-blown war in which there'll be no winners. Congress does nothing. In North Korea, the administration won't negotiate with North Korea while North Korea is thumbing its nose at the international community. Congress does nothing. Here at home, you want to talk about a threat to the institution of marriage? 45 to 50 million people without health insurance. Bankruptcies at a record level. People in home foreclosures. Let's talk about a threat to the institution of marriage. Congress is doing nothing about any of that. Today, in a shameless attempt to divert and distract and distort from the lackluster performance of this Congress, the House is set to write discrimination into the U.S. Constitution. Iraq, Iran, the Middle East, North Korea, health care, gas prices, the minimum wage. No! The most pressing issue in America is gay marriage.
It's expired. Gentleman from Georgia.
Mr. Speaker, I yield myself 15 seconds. The gentleman from Ohio is concerned about the fact that what he says, what next? Is the Congress going to take out from the Pledge of Allegiance with liberty and justice for all? I say to my friend from Ohio, no. Later on this week, we'll have the opportunity to defend one nation under God and keeping the federal judiciary from taking that out. And with that, yield 1 minute.
Will the gentleman yield?
From North Carolina.
I'd ask the gentleman if we worship the same God.
Ouch. Well, at this point, I don't know if that's been picked up by anybody. I hope it does. And I hope it actually gets printed in the Congressional Record. Again, somehow, I think it won't. Something that, sadly, probably will get into the Congressional Record is all of what the following life form had to say. That being the bouffant-encrusted turd from Colorado, Marilyn Musgrave.
I wanted to yield to the primary author of H.Res. 88, but before I do so, I wanted to point out to my good friend from New York that 16 states have recently passed marriage protection amendments, and on an average, they've passed by 71.5%. So with that, let me yield to the gentlewoman from Colorado, Ms. Musgrave.
How much time does the gentleman from Georgia yield?
Consume.
Gentlelady from Colorado is recognized for as much time as she may consume.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank Speaker Hastert and Leader Boehner for bringing this bill to the floor. Letters and emails and phone calls continue to pour into my office, urging me to continue in this effort. And we know that polls show that the overwhelming majority of the American people support traditional marriage, marriage between a man and a woman. And the people have a right to know whether their elected representatives agree with them about protecting traditional marriage. I cannot think of a better good that this body may pursue than to promote and defend the idea that every child deserves both a father and a mother. Studies demonstrate the utmost importance of the presence of a child's biological parents in a child's happiness, health, and future achievements. If we chip away at the institution which binds these parents and the family together, the institution of marriage, you begin to chip away at the future success of that child. I would not want to negate the heroic job that many single parents do every day in providing the necessary support to a child's happiness. But today, we're discussing what social policy is best for our children, and I am convinced that the best is found in promoting and defending traditional marriage. Are there other important issues? Of course there are. But preserving the institution of marriage, which as the Supreme Court said many years ago, is, quote, the foundation of the family and of society, without which there would be neither civilization nor progress, end quote, certainly warrants a few hours of our time. And even if there are other issues we need to address, as a former member, one of my favorites, J.C. Watts said, quote, members of Congress are capable of walking and chewing gum at the same time, end quote. And where are those who say we are wasting time when we are renaming post offices and federal buildings earlier this year? Mr. Chairman, if we have enough time to rename post offices and federal buildings, surely we can spend one afternoon debating whether or not the traditional definition of marriage is worth preserving. Others have asked why we need this amendment, given that courts in New York, Georgia, and Nebraska have recently turned back challenges to traditional marriage. I just would like to say these decisions simply do not settle the issue. Cases in New Jersey and Washington, to name only two of many, remain pending. Additionally, the Massachusetts Supreme Court's Goodrich decision legalizing same-sex marriage in that state continues to stand. Just last week, legislators in Massachusetts put off a measure to give the people the opportunity to decide this issue for themselves. And while the Goodrich case remains on the books, court dockets all over the country will continue to be ensnarled with same-sex marriage litigation as opponents of traditional marriage continue to fight to expand their agenda to the rest of the country. While recent court victories are not unimportant, the ultimate court test, the test in the United States Supreme Court, is still on the horizon. And legal experts agree at least four and probably five of the members of that court will act to overturn traditional marriage in across America. That is why most legal experts expect DOMA to fall once a challenge finally reaches the high court. Which is why it would be the very height of foolishness to rely on the Supreme Court to protect marriage. Sadly, that august tribunal is part of the problem. Justice Scalia has already warned us that the court's 2003 Lawrence decision was only the beginning of a road at the end of which is radical redefinition of marriage at the hands of the court. Does anyone else see the irony in the opponents of this bill calling on us to wait until the Supreme Court rules before deciding this issue? Many of those who protested the loudest that DOMA was unconstitutional when it was enacted in 1996 are today the ones who say we ought to presume DOMA is constitutional until the High Court tells us otherwise. The American people want us to settle this issue now. They don't want us to wait to see how much havoc the courts will wreak on the definition of marriage before we act to protect it. Our marriage laws represent centuries of cumulative wisdom regarding the best way to address public concerns about property, inheritance, legal liability, and raising children. The last matter is especially important because we now know this beyond any reasonable doubt that children thrive best when they are raised in a traditional family. And statistically speaking, the further we go from this ideal, the more we can expect to see increases in measures as a whole host of social problems. Again, this is not to say that children raised in non-traditional families will necessarily fall prey to these problems, but public policy is based on cumulative, not individual experience. Facts, as it has been said, are stubborn things. And one sad but stubborn fact is that the statistical dice are loaded against children who are raised without a father and a mother. Some oppose the marriage amendment on the grounds that the institution of marriage is already in trouble. Why be concerned, they say, about same-sex marriage when the divorce rate among couples in traditional marriages is so high? But can't you see this is a non sequitur? It's like saying to a doctor, the patient already has pneumonia, so why are you taking precautions to prevent him from getting a staph infection? Yes, traditional marriage has its problems, we all know that. And the high divorce rate is a national scandal. But far from undermining my point, this reinforces it. We are dismayed by the breakup of families because we know broken families lead to more and more children being deprived of the tremendous benefit of having both their mom and their dad around to raise them. Other opponents of this amendment argue that the existence of same-sex marriage in Massachusetts has not caused the earth to stop spinning on its axis. So they ask, what is all this fuss about? After only 2 years of experience, it is absurd to suggest that we can even begin to guess how the redefinition of marriage in that state will ramify in the future. And the fact that same-sex marriages in Massachusetts do not directly affect my marriage or your marriage means nothing in regard to the public policy debate. The breakup of the family next door does not directly affect your marriage or my marriage either. But we all recognize that every family that comes apart is a tragedy, and that is why our laws have always sought to encourage, not undermine, traditional families.
To you. Oh.
Now, here's somebody else that I would not want to be like, in spite of how he begins his few-minute speech on the floor of the House. This is a guy named Lincoln Davis, and I've already heard a couple of people comment about the irony, I guess, of anybody from the South, or really, I guess, for that matter, anybody having that name. All you have to do is, you know, a little bit of search on Civil War history. Lincoln Davis. Get it? Again, he is a Democrat, oddly enough. And actually, that is the part that will be kind of obvious from at least part of his opening. It kind of goes downhill from there.
Gentleman from Tennessee is recognized for 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I want to clarify something about the activist judges. Since 1953, since Eisenhower was sworn in his office, there have been 23 federal judges appointed on the U.S. Supreme Court. Of that amount, 17 have been Republicans, 6 have been Democrats. The court today has 7 Republicans and 2 Democrats. I don't know who they're blaming.
Okay, remember, that was the good part. He was actually using logic against the activist judge hysteria. But like I said, it kind of goes downhill from that.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Mr. Speaker, I'm a co-sponsor of this amendment, and I rise today with some serious concerns. First, I'm concerned about the use of faith and marriage to score political points. I'm also concerned about the scope of the amendment. First, I will talk about the amendment scope. In my opinion, the amendment limits its ability to truly protect marriage. As written, the amendment defines marriage between a man and a woman. Sounds good, but I don't think this alone will be good enough to totally protect marriage. Mr. Speaker, it is my belief that the amendment does not go far enough. If we truly want to protect marriage, we should look and do all the things we must to go after the evils that threaten each and every one of our marriages. These are the evils of divorce, adultery, and abuse. The amount of divorce that has occurred in this country has become a threat to marriage. What do our children learn when they see their parents getting divorced left and right, only to remarry and get divorced again? What kind of example does this set? This occurrence clearly undermines the values that are the foundation of every marriage. Of course, I'm speaking of the commonly recited tenet, till death do us part. Marriage is for life, and this amendment needs to include that basic tenet. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, I think we should expand the scope of the amendment to outlaw divorce in this country. Going further, Mr. Speaker, I believe infidelity. Adultery is an evil that threatens the marriage and the heart of every marriage, which is commitment. How can we as a country allow adulterers to go unpunished and continue to make a mockery of marriage? Again, by doing so, what lessons are we teaching our children about marriage? I certainly think that it shows we're not serious about protecting the institution, and this is why I think the amendment should outlaw adultery and make it a felony. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, we must address spousal abuse and child abuse. Think of how many marriages end in a divorce or permanent separation because one spouse is abusive. And, Mr. Speaker, I personally think child abuse may be the most despicable act one can commit. This is why, if we are truly seriously about protecting marriage to the point we will amend the Constitution, we should extend the punishment of abuse to prevent those who do such a heinous act from ever running for an elected position anywhere. We should also prevent those who commit adultery or get a divorce from running for office. Mr. Speaker, this House must lead by example. If we want those watching on C-SPAN to actually believe we are serious about protecting marriage, then we should go after the other major threats to the institution, not just the threats that homosexuals may someday be allowed to marry in a state other than Massachusetts. And elected officials should certainly lead by example. Now for my second concern, Mr. Speaker, as a person of faith who's been blessed with a wonderful marriage for 42 years, I'm deeply troubled that some may be using this amendment to score political points with their base. Additional minute, please.
I yield the gentleman an additional 1 minute.
Why else would you be voting for an amendment that has no chance of becoming law since the Senate has already rejected it? Why else would we vote an amendment that may not be necessary when you consider that 45 states have enacted either constitutional or statutory bans on gay marriage? and other states like my home state of Tennessee have put such bans on the ballot in November. Why, too, would Congressional Quarterly today in their July 17, 2006 issue report that this amendment is a part of the legislative values agenda rolled out to rally the GOP base in the run-up of the November elections? Just as one should not take the Lord's name in vain, I also believe a good value for folks is to never undermine religion or marriage by using them to score the political points with the base in order to win elections. In closing, Mr. Speaker, I think it's time for both parties to stop playing with the bases that live on the political fringes and instead remember that there is one true base, the American people. The people I represent would be more motivated if we could address the cost of $3 a gallon gas and cut it in half, reduce the cost of health care for a family of four from $1,000 it currently costs for a family, increase the minimum wage from $5.15 to $7.25 an hour, address the illegal immigration, reduce budget deficits, and balance our budget. I yield back the balance of my time.
Now, as I've already heard at least one person say on the radio today on Air America, I kind of wonder what the people who worship Ronald Reagan as a deity would have to say about that little thing in there about not allowing anybody who's been divorced to run or hold office. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I'm guessing some people out there have thought about this kind of logic. You know, if you want to protect marriage, why don't you do, you know, blah, 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 namely a lot of the stuff he's talking about. It's easy to get a little, I guess, kind of a visceral, I guess, you know, rush out of talking about that because, yeah, it does show up the lack of logic in the fascist religionist front. But keep one thing in mind. Think about what would happen if they took you up on it. If they said, okay, let's go ahead and do this. Think about it. And now, going to a couple people who were against this monstrosity and who I wish would expend, you know, 1/4 of 1% as much energy on trans issues as they managed to work up passion on this.
At this point, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to yield 5 minutes to the gentlewoman from Wisconsin, Ms. Baldwin.
Gentlewoman's recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the gentleman and rise this morning in strong opposition to the rule before us. And I hope later today to return to the floor and address the substance of the federal marriage amendment. But now wanted to speak to this process because by bringing up this unnecessary and divisive amendment to write discrimination into the Constitution, the leadership of this House once again illustrates just how out of step Congress is with the rest of America. With the defeat of the amendment in the Senate a mere 5 weeks ago, this legislation should have never reached the floor of the House. Yet, unsurprisingly, politics is prevailing over common sense, and today we are going to be hearing a lot of hurtful political rhetoric targeting gay and lesbian families, all for the purpose of pandering to a narrow political base. Mr. Speaker, America faces great challenges both at home and abroad. We're confronted with record high gas prices, an endless and expensive war in Iraq, skyrocketing health care costs, and a growing international crisis in the Middle East and North Korea. But the federal marriage amendment allowed under this rule, of course, does nothing to address these very pressing challenges. At a time of such great tests confronting our nation, America's leaders should be uniting rather than dividing our country. But the FMA does exactly the opposite of that, and it certainly puts politics ahead of real progress. The federal marriage amendment is also unnecessary. Since 2004, states around the country have been addressing the issue of gay marriage through the normal legislative and governmental process. Today, Massachusetts remains the only state that allows gay marriage. But several other states, including Vermont, Connecticut, and California, have passed laws granting civil union protections for same-sex couples. Those laws would certainly be threatened if this amendment were to pass. The proposed FMA limits the ability of states to confer protections such as important rights like hospital visitation rights, health insurance, and broader civil union or domestic partnership protections on unmarried couples. And it undermines our federalist tradition of deferring to the states to regulate the institution of marriage. Mr. Speaker, many Americans are struggling with the issue of same-sex marriage on a personal level today. There is a vibrant debate going on across our nation, in church basements, in break rooms, in dining rooms. This debate would be completely shut down and stifled if this amendment were to pass. Our Constitution, the most cherished document embodying the American dream of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, should not be amended to single out and deny the rights of any one group of Americans. This divisive, hateful, and unnecessary amendment is unworthy of our great Constitution that has been the foundation of our great nation. And I urge my colleagues to reject this rule and to vote against the amendment. Thank you, and I yield back.
Gentleman from Massachusetts.
Mr. Speaker, at this time I'd like to yield 4 minutes to the gentleman from Massachusetts, Mr. Frank.
Gentleman from Massachusetts, Mr. Frank, is recognized for 4 minutes.
Mr. Speaker, as I listen, I am struck anew by the ability of pre-programmed rhetoric to resist the facts. We've heard talk about activist judges, federal judges. No federal judge has been involved here. There is not a pending decision that's now in force by a single federal judge. That doesn't stop people from invoking it because facts are irrelevant to this kind of rhetoric. In fact, this amendment is being described in ways that are not accurate. It is not an amendment to prevent judges, activist judges, pacifist judges, any kind of judges from deciding. It's an amendment to prevent anybody from deciding. In the state of Massachusetts, we have had same-sex marriage for over 2 years. None of the negative consequences that people have predicted came true. In consequence, I believe the political community of Massachusetts is prepared to say, if two men love each other and are prepared to be committed to each other legally as well as emotionally, that's rather a good thing, and we will say it's okay. If the voters of Massachusetts in a referendum in 2008, which we might have, were to ratify same-sex marriage, this amendment would cancel it out. It has nothing to do with activist judges. It has to do with a decision that says no state by any political process can make that decision. The legislature of California, not judges in California, voted to allow two women who love each other to be legally responsible for each other. And that would, if it were to be ratified by a governor after the next election, would be canceled out. So this is not an amendment about activist judges. This is an amendment that says no state by whatever process, including a referendum, can make this decision. Now why? Well, I also feel strengthened in my advocacy of a cause when people won't tell me their real arguments against it. I think this is motivated, frankly, by a dislike of those of us who are gay and lesbian on the part of those who were the main motivators. You know, we're told don't take things personally, but I take this personally. I take it personally when people decide to take political batting practice with my life, when people decide that they will demonize, not just me, I'm old, I'm over it, but young people who are just starting out, who find themselves, for reasons they can't explain, attracted to someone of the same sex, and they're demonized in this House of Representatives as if they are a threat to marriage. That is the biggest nonsensical statement of all. Yes, marriage between a man and a woman who are in love is a good thing. How does allowing two men who love each other to become legally committed endanger these marriages of 37 and 38 years? Let me tell you the logical structure, or the illogical structure of the argument on the other side. People will remember the commercial for V8 juice years ago, in which a cartoon character who was feeling poorly drank various juices to see if he or she could be energized. And none of them worked. Tomato juice didn't work, apple juice didn't work, pineapple juice didn't work, and then someone gives them a V8, and the cartoon character gets pumped up literally, and steam comes out of his ears, and he's really now raring to go because he had a V8. And he says to himself, wow, I could have had a V8. Note in the record, I just smacked myself on the forehead for emphasis. That's what happened in the commercial. And now that's apparently the logical structure of same-sex marriage. Apparently there were these 37, 38, 42-year long marriages all over the place. There are happily married men all over America, and they are content with their wives, they are heterosexual, they feel this physical and emotional attraction to each other, And then they read in the paper that in the state of Massachusetts, it is now possible for there to be a same-sex marriage. And how is the marriage endangered? Apparently, people happily married in Indiana and Nebraska and Kansas and Mississippi read that we have had same-sex marriage quite successfully in Massachusetts, and they look in the mirror and they say, wow, I could have married a guy. So apparently same-sex marriage is the V8 juice of America. And apparently there are people who fear that knowing that two men who love each other want to be committed to each other somehow will dissolve the bounds of matrimony between two heterosexuals. It is, of course, nonsense. I will do my friends the credit of acknowledging that they don't believe it. There is a political motive here. There are people who dislike. Now, there are some people who are genuinely concerned. They're genuinely concerned that there will be negative social consequences. I understand that. I've heard that every time we deal with discrimination, when we dealt with the Americans with Disabilities Act, with gender, with race, with ethnicity, with age. I understand their fears. We have had same-sex marriage in Massachusetts for over 2 years. Thousands of loving men and women have been able to come together and express their commitment to each other, and no one, not even the most dedicated opponent, has been able to point to a single negative consequence. So I understand the people who are afraid. We have disproven the fears, and what is left is only dislike of many of us, and it simply is not appropriate to score political points by demonizing or seeking to minimize the lives of your fellow citizens.
Well, if I had time to play Alan Parsons again, I would, because this is also somebody that I definitely never want to be like. Let me replay you two little bits of old Barnes' speech. And again, I really hate having to barbecue a liberal on, you know, anything along these lines, because, you know, I'm not for this amendment, and I recognize the psychosis of the fascist religionists, you know, just like he does. But here's two snippets from old Barn, one from the beginning, one from the end.
Mr. Speaker, as I listen, I am struck anew by the ability of pre-programmed rhetoric to resist the fact. And it simply is not appropriate to score political points by demonizing or seeking to minimize the lives of your fellow citizens.
Okay. There's only about 2 minutes left in this, the 51st edition of I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake, here on the Trans FM radio network. So I'm going to do the only thing I can. I'm going to channel Linda Richman. Okay, people. The subject is all of the times that Barney Frank has used the bathroom issue and the shower issue to demonize the notion that transgender people deserve to be included in federal non-discrimination legislation, if not actually demonizing us as people. And he can say he was talking politically, but he was demonizing us. We know it. Yes, he's allegedly okay with us being in the hate crimes law, but we know what he did with Enda and what he's going to do again. What a fucking hypocrite. Yep, that's the subject. Go talk amongst yourselves. And more importantly, just do a little bit of research on the internet if you're not familiar with what Barn has had to say about our being even considered to be in ENDA or other federal anti-discrimination legislation. Just do some research for yourselves. That having been said, we are pretty much at the end of this edition of I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake. As always, thank you for tuning in. Hopefully next time I'll get back to what I've been saying I'm going to get back to for quite a while, that focus on the family psychosis regarding gay marriage. And again, you know, there won't, not all of it will be about how it affects trans people, but it always helps to see just how far over the edge the fascist religionists are, and to cut through their propaganda. These people are highly paid. They're very good at twisting, completely twisting the minds of the American voters. So thank you for tuning in. I'm Katrina Rose, and I'll be back soon.